KBS Publishing, in conjunction with rstuttle.com, proudly presents... Heirs of the Enemy, Volume 5 of the Demonstone Chronicles, written by Richard S. Tuttle, read by the author. Prologue. Emperor Forkuna strode briskly through the corridors of the Imperial Palace in despair. Directly behind him were his closest advisor, Lord Kimner, and the Emperor's son, General Jar. A squad of Imperial soldiers surrounded the three most important men in the Empire of Baruch. When they reached the Emperor's study, six soldiers followed the three men into the room, while the rest of the squad took up positions in the corridor outside.
"You look quite pleased with yourself," Lord Kimner stated, as the Emperor eased into his chair behind the desk. "Are you sure this is a wise move?"
"Perfectly sure," smiled the Emperor. "Our union with the Kingdom of Spino is only the beginning. This federation that we have started today will blossom into a government that will encompass the entire continent. It is the only way to ensure our continued existence."
"Spino cannot be considered an equal to the Empire of Baruch," argued General Jar. "I can well understand the need to expand, but not by giving up our sovereignty. If you desire to rule over Spino, you only need to give the word. My armies will conquer them within a few months."
The Emperor sighed heavily as he glanced at his son. He shook his head slowly with disappointment.
"You still have not grasped what I'm trying to do, Jar. This gloom that hangs over the land affects all countries, not just the Empire. We have the greatest wealth of minerals within our borders, but we must import everything else. As our fields begin to wither and die, where will we get food to eat?"
"That is what you're doing this for?" balked the General. "Just because of the gloom?"
"The gloom hangs heavily over our heads," commented Lord Kimner. "But surely it will pass. The skies of Soroka were once like this when the pyres erupted years ago. It hardly means the end of everything."
"This gloom is not caused by a volcanic eruption," retorted the Emperor. "As for Soroka, it has ceased to exist. That entire country is now buried under a desert so vast that it is unimaginable. That is what you two do not understand. The gloom is not going away. Whatever caused it, it is here to stay. The only way for any of us to survive is to band together. Our union with the Kingdom of Spino is merely the first step for the Federation. In the coming months, I will negotiate with all of the countries of Zara. I will bring them all into the Federation."
"Why?" frowned General Jar. "I still do not understand. Why do you need to cede power to any of those countries? We can either conquer them or trade with them, but you want to take it further. I do not understand."
"Aerta currently grows more food than they can eat," explained the Emperor. "But what will happen when their supply of food diminishes? Will they then be eager to sell us food?"
"Aerta will surely hoard their food," answered Lord Kimner.
"If they do," scowled General Jar, "I will march our armies into Giza and seize the food."
"Will you?" countered Emperor Forkuna.
"And what if you are met by the combined armies of Ertak, Aerta, and Kandinar? Do you really think the Aertans are blind? You start marching our armies northward, and they will make allies with their neighbors long before you arrive. All you will accomplish is losing a large number of our soldiers. I suppose that might allow our food to go further, but it would also leave us rather vulnerable to any nation that coveted our minerals. Stop thinking like a bully in the playing field, and start thinking like an emperor. The task of governing this empire will one day fall into your hands."
"How does the Federation solve our problem?" retorted the General.
"Ertak and Aerta will join the Federation," explained the Emperor. "When they do, they will not be able to hoard food for their own use. They will have an obligation to share it among the members of the Federation. Should they refuse, then the other members will surely side with us in the dispute. I am doing what must be done to ensure our continued existence. You must learn to follow my example."
"There are risks to your plan," interjected Lord Kimner. "Already there are whispers among the nobles. Surely you must know that many of our people are not happy with the formation of the Federation. They see it as a lessening of our importance."
"They are small-minded fools," sighed Emperor Forkuna.
Everyone thinks this gloom will disappear tomorrow, but no one can give me a logical reason for his beliefs. The King of Spino understood the problem well enough. He was as eager to form the Federation as I was, and I think the other kingdoms will also agree when I present it to them. Aerta might have food, but it lacks the minerals that we possess. The Federation will be in their best interest as well as ours.
If you can get them to agree, Lord Kimner replied in a dubious tone.
That is what a ruler is supposed to do, stated the Emperor. I will talk to the other rulers and explain the need to join together. I will be successful. Of that I have no doubts.
Shouting erupted in the corridor outside the study, and the soldiers in the room stiffened and readied their weapons. General Jar also drew his sword and stepped between his father's desk and the door to the corridor. The sounds of battle could be heard outside the room, and the six soldiers in the study moved towards the door.
Evidently, Lord Kimner said softly, someone has taken exception to your plan to start the Federation.
Emperor Forkuna rose to his feet and stared at the door.
Barricade the door,
he commanded, before turning his gaze to his son.
Put your sword away, Jar.
I will defend you with my life,
retorted the general, as the soldiers began moving furniture in front of the door.
That you will,
the Emperor smiled thinly, but not from this room. I will not allow anyone to catch the two of us together. My soldiers will hold off the enemy, while you escape and rally forces loyal to us.
Escape? Balked the general. I will not run like a frightened doe.
You will do as I command, snapped Emperor Forkuna.
Get out the window, while there is still time.
Bring back only the most loyal troops, and attack them from the rear. Hurry!
General Jar remained frozen for a moment before nodding his head and sheathing his sword. He ripped the curtains from the window and hastily fashioned the rope that he tied around the leg of the desk. He tossed the free end out the window and then climbed down to the ground. He stood in the dark for a moment as he listened to the sounds of the night. He could not hear any commotion coming from the palace, and he realized that no one was even aware of the attempted coup. He raced for the closest entrance to the palace, but he halted before he entered the cone of light cast by the torches. Two bodies were spread across the palace steps, and in that instant, General Jar knew that there would be no help to be found inside the palace. General Jar turned around and raced through the dark night. He wormed his way into a tall hedge that grew alongside the walls of the estate, and found the old hidden door he had discovered when he was a child. He quietly eased the door open and stepped through the wall into another hedge that lined the outside of the wall. He peered out and saw that the street was deserted. Breaking free from the hedge, the general raced through the city streets to the garrison nearby. When he burst through the door of the garrison, the soldiers stiffened at his arrival. The general glanced at the faces of the men, as if he could determine if any of them were in league with the rebels. He could not determine their loyalty, but their presence in the garrison indicated that they were not involved in the coup. Besides, Jar had no choice in the matter. If the throne was to be saved, he needed to act quickly.
"Prepare for battle," commanded the general. "Rebels are attempting to assassinate Emperor Forkuna. Move, move, move!"
The men scrambled to get into their boots and grab their weapons. The colonel in charge of the garrison approached the general and saluted.
"What are our orders?"
"You will take the palace by force," answered General Jar. "Everyone inside the walls of the palace is suspect, with the exception of the Emperor and Lord Kimner. Get these men inside the palace now."
As the colonel shouted orders to his men, General Jar stepped out onto the street. He stared toward the distant palace as the soldiers rushed out and formed ranks. With 1,000 men at his back, General Jar led the charge towards the palace. He made no attempt at a stealthy approach, but rather shouted death to the rebels. The soldiers manning the gates of the palace took one look at the charging army and ran. General Jar and his men climbed over the gates and walls, and then continued the charge towards the palace. Defending soldiers appeared on the steps of the palace. General Jar had no idea if the defenders were loyal or rebels, and he did not care. He shouted orders for his men to head towards the Emperor's study, and then unsheathed his own sword. He led the charge into the defenders. For a brief moment, the charge halted as they battled, but General Jar sliced his way through the knot of defenders, and his men quickly followed. Other defenders rushed into the large entry foyer, and Jar's men spread out to meet them. The general halted only briefly as he shouted instructions to his men. He ordered several squads to each side of the grand staircase to hold off the defenders, while he led the rest of his men up the stairs. Uniformed bodies cluttered the floors of the corridors as the general led his men towards the Emperor's study. The general slipped on the blood-soaked floor and almost lost his balance. As he straightened himself, the colonel and several men raced by him. Jar hurried after them. The corridor outside the Emperor's study was littered with bodies, and the door to the study was shattered to pieces. The general could hear fighting still going on in the study, and his hopes rose for the first time since fleeing the study. He followed the colonel and a couple of soldiers into the room. 5 black-clad men turned to meet the new threat. The assassins were highly skilled, and the colonel and 2 soldiers immediately fell to their blades. General Jar veered to the right as his soldiers followed him into the room, his primary goal being the protection of his father. As he leaped over the bodies of his father's guards, General Jar saw the bodies of Lord Kimner and Emperor Forkuna. He turned with a vengeance to lash out at the assassins, but 4 of them were already dead. The 5th was fighting a losing battle against 3 soldiers.
"Capture him alive," spat the general.
The 3 soldiers went to a defensive mode, and it cost them their lives as the assassins slashed out with precision strokes. General Jar did not appear to notice as he knelt next to his father's body. For several moments, he knelt and stared into his father's dead eyes, and then he noticed that the room had gone silent. He rose and turned towards the door. 2 soldiers held the limp form of the last assassin.
"Is he alive?" asked the general.
Both soldiers nodded silently.
"Take him to the dungeons and secure him. No one is to get near him until I am done with him."
The 2 soldiers dragged the assassin out of the study, as the other soldiers stood and stared at the general. General Jar waved the men from the room, and they took up positions outside the shattered doors. For several long moments, Jar did nothing but stare at his father's corpse. Unexpectedly, he heard a moan behind him. Turning with his sword in hand, he gazed down at Lord Kimner. The Emperor's advisor held his hand over a bloody gash across his abdomen as he tried to sit up. The general moved across the room and knelt by his side.
"Stay still. I will have a healer brought to you."
"I am beyond a healer's touch," the advisor said weakly. "But your father left a message for you. He knows that you do not care for his idea of the Federation, but he implores you to follow through with it."
General Jar called to the soldiers outside the door. He ordered them to get a healer, and then turned his attention back to Lord Kimner.
"I will make a deal with you," the general said with a thin smile. "You stay alive to help me, and I will pursue the Federation."
The noble's eyebrows rose in surprise.
"What do you need me for?"
"I am not a negotiator," answered the general. "I am a warrior, and I can change enough to become an emperor, but I will not accept other countries as the equals of the empire. I need your skills in getting the other monarchs to accept my terms for this Federation."
"There are many in the palace who can help you with that task. Do not pin your hopes for the future on an old man who is dying."
"There is no one in this palace that I trust now. You alone stood alongside my father. You shall be my advisor."
"Then take his advice to heart," wheezed the noble. "Secure your family far away from this palace and keep them hidden."
The general frowned deeply.
"What are you saying?"
"It was not soldiers who came here tonight. They were hired assassins. Gaze upon their bodies."
General Jar rose and walked to the black-clad bodies. He already knew that the assassins wore no uniforms, but the significance had not registered with him. He knelt next to one of the bodies and frowned. He reached out and plucked a golden pin off the body's chest. He held it up and let the torchlight glance off of it.
"What is it?"
he asked.
"A badger," Lord Kimner replied. "The badgers are a private band of mercenaries. They have been around for centuries, but they are a secretive group. They are seldom seen in private or in public, and I have never heard of one being captured before tonight. Whoever sent them here today had planned to annihilate the Emperor's entire family. They will try again."
"Then the soldiers we slew to get in here were not part of the coup?"
"The soldiers were probably defending the palace. The badgers would not stoop to allying themselves with soldiers. They would sneak into the palace and eliminate any soldiers that got in their way."
A healer rushed into the room, and the general rose to his feet. While the healer tended to the wounded noble, the general walked out of the room and headed for the dungeons. He had wanted the last assassin kept alive to make an example out of him, but now he wanted him more for the information that could be tortured out of him. When the general reached the dungeons, he demanded to know where the prisoner was being kept. The guards directed him to the deepest part of the dungeons, where the general found two more guards standing outside the door to one of the cells. The guards stiffened at his approach.
"Open the door," demanded the general.
Clutching the golden pin in one hand, the general snared a torch from the wall with the other hand and stepped into the small cell. He saw the assassin chained to the wall across from the door, and he strode across the room. At first, Jar thought that the assassin was still unconscious, but his face clouded with anger when he noticed the blue tint to the man's skin.
"What is the meaning of this?" shouted the general.
Both guards rushed into the room. One of them, noticing the general's gaze, hurried to the assassin's side. His brow furrowed in confusion as he examined the corpse. "He is dead."
"I ordered that he be kept alive," snapped the general. "Which of you will take his place?"
"No one entered this cell once he was confined,"
the nervous guard near the general stated.
"No one."
The guard closest to the corpse noticed a glint between the assassin's teeth, and he forced the badger's mouth open. Stuck in the back of the assassin's throat was a small golden pin.
"He must have ripped the pin off his chest with his teeth,"
the guard mused, as he reached in and extracted the pin.
"And choked on it?" scoffed the general.
The guard handling this spittle-encrusted pin was clumsy, and as he was trying to give it to the general, it pricked his skin. The guard's eyes immediately glazed over, and his body teetered before falling to the floor. The other guard rushed to his partner's side, but refused to pick up the pin. He stared at it in disbelief.
"The pin is poisoned," he announced. "Look at the tint near the tip."
General Jar's eyes suddenly grew large as he opened his palm and stared at the golden pin in his hand. He dropped the torch to the floor and slowly opened a pouch on his belt. With agonizingly slow movements, the general eased the pin into his pouch. When the pin was safely in the pouch, the general let out a deep breath and then retreated from the cell. Unnerved by his close encounter with death, the general made his way to his own study. He slumped into his chair and called for his guard to bring a particular officer to him. A few minutes later, a colonel walked into the study. The officer saluted and waited for the general to speak.
"I have a secret task for you, Colonel Jurgen. I want you to assemble a force of 100 men. Each man must be proven loyal to me, and he must be single."
"Single, sir?"
"Unmarried. You will have the pick of anyone you want, but no one is to know anything of what I tell you, even the men under your command. Is that clear?"
"Perfectly, sir. What will be the task for this group?"
"You will be assigned to safeguard my family. Once the force is assembled, I want you to find an estate far from the city. The estate must be unseen from any road or trail, and once your men are assigned to it, they may not leave. You alone, Colonel, will have leave to travel to Despair, and only for the purpose of speaking with me. Do you understand?"
"Perfectly, sir. Your family will be kept safe and hidden. I stake my life on it."
"And the lives of the men under your command," declared the general.